We may go over a little bit today. I hope that you like, because we have such an incredible amount of material to cover, and we're really excited to be sharing all this with you. But we also want to really let you know what AFB we've been up to, because we really did feel we really took the lead. Well, Dr. Penny Rosenblum and her team definitely took the lead on really two really critical areas that had to deal with COVID-19. So Penny, thank you, Dr. Rosenblum, thank you so much, and my coworker, for joining us today.
Well, I'm excited to be here. Thanks, Melody, for having me, and nice to meet everybody in the Inform and Connect group. So thanks.
Oh, yes, thank you so much. So I want to get started, Penny. Really, you know, as you said, AFB really took the lead on this and really had a strong collaboration on these two surveys that covered multiple areas for when dealing with blindness and any degree in low vision and deaf and other disabilities through COVID-19, and then took us into education. So can you kind of get us started on how the collaboration, the lead all took place first? We'll start there.
Sure. So if you think back to March, when you were trying to decide, you know, should I have dinner with those friends? Can I take that trip? And then we got into April and it's, where do I get toilet paper? We were in a really chaotic time. And Troy Otillo, who's the CEO of IRA, recognized that people were calling into IRA, which is a visual interpreting service, for different things than they were in February. They were, you know, getting on a bus and saying, can you tell me where I can sit 6 feet apart from somebody? Work tasks, many of us were moving to working at home, and work tasks that now all of a sudden you're not in your regular office and something weren't accessible to you, people were calling IRA to ask those kinds of questions. So Troy Otillo approached Kirk Adams, who is our CEO here at AFB, and said, hey, let's do just a little tiny survey together. Well, that little tiny survey became a huge undertaking called Latin in Accessibility. And between April 3rd and April 13th, the survey was open. If you're on this call and you were part of that group, thank you so much for being one of the 1,921 people in the U.S. with visual impairments who completed the survey. And we looked at a lot of different areas: healthcare, transportation, social, education, access to meals, food, and supplies, employment, and voting. Important one coming up here, isn't it?
Yes.
As soon as that survey came out in April, early April, Dr. Tina Hertzberg at the University of South Carolina, who's a dear colleague of mine, contacted me and she said, I have been thinking we need to do something to learn about how COVID-19 is impacting our children with visual impairments, the teachers of students with visual impairments, or what we call the TVIs, and the orientation and mobility, or O&M specialists. And so we turned around and we got that survey together and released it on April 22nd. It was open to May 13th. And for that survey, we have data on 455 children from their family members and 1,028 professionals. So these two surveys are really large sample sizes for the field of visual impairment. And the reason they're such large sample sizes, besides the importance of the topics, are because for the Flatten and Accessibility Study, there were 16 organizations, including AFB and companies, that collaborated in getting the word out about those. So I'm not going to name them all. You can go to our website, www.afb.org/flatteninaccessibility. That's all one word. And you can see the 16 organizations. But these are going to be ones you know: IRA, Be My Eyes, Humanware, Vispero, ACB, NFB, AER, so Vision Serve Alliance, so and more. So 16 organizations for Flatten, and with access and engagement, we had 20, including AFB, many of the same ones, but we added in some of our children ones: Perkins School for the Blind, Texas School for the Blind, Seedlings Braille Books, National Braille Press. So big collaborative efforts that really are giving us a lot of information, Melody.
That is amazing. And I love the collaboration, and that's so very critical and important. And what I really want to highlight here with the Flatten in Accessibility is the data that you got. And today, everybody, there's so many ways we can go with this, but we really wanted to focus on the social aspect. So what we mean by that is just how this has really affected the heart of our community. And Penny and I were talking earlier today, and she was sharing some of the feedback with the research that they did. They did not only, and Penny, I'll let you finish this out, getting the data, but really taking a look at the people and giving them the ability to have their voices heard.
Absolutely. So should we,
yes. And so it's really, I mean, we had, and showing there's a definitely a degree of very resilient voices and also people with fears. And so we wanted to take that time to kind of share a little of that with you from each survey.
Okay, so let's start out, and we're primarily going to focus on the adult survey. So remember, I said there was 1,921 people. They got to choose which topics they wanted to answer based on how COVID-19 was impacting their life. And remember, this is back in early April. So 1,025 people, or 56% of the people taking the survey, had concerns that related to their social experiences. And so they chose to answer that section of the survey. Just for your own knowledge, the two sections that the most people answered were transportation and healthcare. So if you have a visual impairment, you think to yourself about how COVID-19 has impacted you in areas, those may come up first. And actually, Melody, I wanted to mention to your listeners, talking about transportation and healthcare, that on October 23rd, we're going to have the first of our three town halls here at AFB, where we're going to not present a lot of data from the report, but instead take your questions and have it interactive. And the topics for the October 23rd, 2 p.m. town hall are healthcare, transportation, and voting. Notice where we put voting, folks.
Yes.
Town hall on October 29th at 2 p.m. Eastern, where we're going to talk about employment and technology, because technology really cut across all our areas. And finally, on November 10th at 2 p.m. Eastern, we're going to have a town hall where we're going to talk about education across the lifespan. Because it's not just about education for children, but folks who are learning orientation mobility skills, or were just about ready to go off and get their dog eye, have been impacted by COVID. So you can go to the AFB website, www.afb.org/town halls, to sign up for those town halls and to share your questions and comments that you want addressed. But that wasn't really what you wanted. That's just my comment.
That, you beat me to the punch. I was going to be like, what we're doing next, but we'll do it again.
We'll do that at the end. But let's get back to 1,025 people and what they had to share about social. So social challenges for many of us, and I have low vision myself, Melody, for many of us, social situations can kind of be a little challenging. You know,
yes, on their own without COVID. Yes.
Well, here now we have the opposite. We're not in the room with people. We are socially distancing. We are staying home in quarantine. We are staying home at stay-at-home orders from our governor. So we had a different set of issues that came up for a lot of people. And what's kind of challenging when you have a visual impairment, oftentimes you have other disabilities. Actually, 43% of the people in our study, and I'm gonna just sneak a peek here at my phone, so just excuse me, but 43% or 796 of the 1,921 people reported they had an additional disabilities. And those top three disabilities were diabetes, deaf or hard of hearing, and then the third one was significant psychiatric disorder. So 158 people of that 796, or 20% of people who said, I have an additional disability, had a psychiatric disorder, depression, anxiety. So when you put an additional disability coupled with visual impairment and COVID, boy, that can be challenging. I want to share a quote with you from somebody who's deafblind. Deafblindness is isolation enough. Without face-to-face tactile communication, I might as well be in solitary confinement. And this person was a white female, age 45 to 54 years old. So this woman's experience of that additional disability coupled with her visual impairment really caused isolation. And I think a lot of people are still experiencing that 7 months later.
Yes, I agree with you. And I mean, I've seen it, we still see it today. So most definitely. And I loved how you're bringing up this point of the social aspect is there so many times when we pull out these numbers of research that they can be like, okay, well, what does that mean? And then the areas that I love how you and your team are leading is breaking it down to what those percentages look like, what it is we're actually hearing, what it is we're seeing, identifying a whole bunch of different set of issues, and how we're going to be coping with them.
Very much so.
And yes, and I would love one of the quotes that we were talking about earlier to talk about a little bit of resilience too, is because we all, you know, facing those challenges. With that study, when we're finding, when you talk about other things that are other disabilities that are incorporated, how did any of the people in the survey talk about how they would cope with those situations with having multiple disabilities?
Yeah. Well, a couple things that I think are important is attitude. And so let me read you a quote from somebody 65 to 74 years of age, again, another white female. I've had mental health issues in the past, which I attribute to my visual impairment that I've had since birth, specifically anxiety and clinical depression. I've been successfully treated and feel that I am very, very stable at this point. I have to adopt a failure is not an option mindset. And I think this individual really helps us recognize that we each have choices. When we wake up in the morning, we have a choice on how we're going to approach that day. And part of it, whether you have a visual impairment or you don't have a visual impairment, is that, you know, mindset that you take, that internal social talking is such an important piece of how you deal with any type of stress or tragedy.
Yes, it is. And we have the choices. And we talk about, actually, that's a very common theme that comes up in our podcast, is mindset, making your own destiny, creating your own happiness, and the perseverance that you do have the choices to make. And then making that choice, coming to a place of creativity and even of acceptance of the situation, which we are all dealt with the COVID. So it sort of put us on some sort of even flat playing ground to a sense.
Yeah. And I think another piece, and I think listeners can definitely identify this, is that support network. Some of us have a large network pre-COVID, friends, families, coworkers. Other of us have very limited networks. So one person shared, this is another female, we have a lot of those, 77% of our population of the survey were females. So not surprising here, but a female 55 to 64 years of age said, I'm lucky that I have a strong family support system. While I do have anxiety and mild depression, I'm able to lean on family and God's love to help me get through this. So that ability to be able to reach out to others, if you're a person of faith, to turn to your faith is important. On the flip side to that, Melody, I do want to share and something I hadn't thought a whole lot about. I'm in Arizona, you and other AFB staff joining me today are on the East Coast. We're here in Zoom and with our listeners as well. So we're connecting virtually. And we had some participants in the Flatten In Accessibility study who talked about, yes, I'm getting on Zoom meetings with my church group, with my family, with my musical choir group. And other people are able to see each other, you know, see those smiles, you know, see what somebody's holding up, or look at the, you know, the thing I got in the mail, or, you know, here comes the grandchild. And how, even though they were voice-wise connected through a tool such as Zoom or Google Meets or FaceTime, they weren't getting the same level of comfort or support from those interactions as the folks who were able to see who was on the screen.
You know, Penny, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because, you know, me being a totally blind person, I experience that even now as we're on this Zoom calls, and I, you know, connecting with everyone through Inform and Connect is really incredible. And the notes that I get afterwards from our listeners really just keep my heart full. But it's the same. And, you know, I never, as a person who is totally blind, have found that, you know, I, you know, sometimes before in the opposite situation, which we talked about earlier, is you do have other challenges. Okay, how do I navigate this social scene? How do I navigate, you know, a networking or whatever, a party, wherever you're at, right? But you don't realize how being around people and their energy, and even if you can't physically see them, how you do see them in a way. And it does feel a bit isolating. So I just thought that was a really, I wanted to validate your point. It's not easy. I think people think, oh, well, they can just talk on the phone, and it's not.
It's not, you know, the same. You know, I keep sharing quotes, but I think rather than hearing my voice, it's so important that we hear the voices of the 1921 participants. And we have over 50 quotes in the report. My gosh, we found a multiracial female who's age 35 to 44 with additional disabilities. And this person talked about the importance of physical touch, which is another piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. I need physical touch to connect with people. I need handshakes and hugs that Sunday always brought from going to church. I was waiting on a counselor to be available to get me through a crime I experienced before COVID-19. Now are we supposed to stay home and keep at least 6 feet from others? I've been alone with my own thoughts since mid-February. Depression has set in, my PTSD hasn't been put back in check, and the crime and neither has anxiety. I'm just a wreck. I think this was one of the most powerful quotes for our team. Our team was comprised of myself and 6 other individuals. And as we were analyzing the data, and we specifically left out the crime that this individual experienced, but it was a violent crime. We cried, not just from this quote, but from many of the other quotes. It was very, very moving to read the comments that people wrote. Some people wrote a book because we were giving them an opportunity to share their concerns. Again, whether it was around healthcare or transportation or social or technology use, they all really intertwined. Because, you know, none of us just live in our social world or our healthcare world or our transportation world. All parts of our world are intertwined. And that came through so loud and clear, both with the positives and the, unfortunately, many negatives. Now, again, COVID has been a very stressful, negative time. This was very early in the pandemic. I think many of us hopefully have adopted some strategies, but I really, truly worry about people who don't have a strong social network and how isolated they must be feeling 7 months into this.
Yes, I agree. And I'm really happy that we're taking that initiative to have those town halls and to keep this conversation going.
Absolutely. You know, and it really brings up a good point. Do you want me to talk about the blog post now, Melody, or did you want to say that at the end?
No, let's go ahead and talk about
the blog post. Can you tell
us? Yes. Talk about the blog post, and then we will move to education.
Okay. I didn't talk about blog post, so I'm going to do my best to remember. But the day that the Flaunt and Accessibility Report, which I do want to say is on the website, afb.org/Flaunt and Accessibility. And I want to point out 2 things about this report. One, it is available as a fully accessible PDF. So you will get everything as a screen reader user that is on that print page. And I really want to thank our community engagement team because that was not an easy feat. But we also have it up as a web page, and there's different sections. So you can go to the transportation section or the social section. So you as somebody who is using this report beyond your own reading, have some flexibility in how you use it. And you're saying, well, Penny, I'm a visually impaired person. I took part in the survey, or I just came today to inform and connect. And what do you mean I'm going to use the survey? Let me tell you. So when we released the survey, I did a blind copy email to the participants who had left their email address when they took the survey to notify them that the report was out. And very shortly after that email went out, a participant emailed me and said, well, this is really great, but what are you going to do about it? Meaning me, AFB. That was my interpretation, and I don't mean any disrespect to this person. I thank this person profusely. And I'm like, kind of looked at the email, and I thought to myself, what do you mean, what am I going to do about it? Well, participant, what are you going to do about it? And so I sat down to write the participant an email, and we very quickly, the AFB realized it made a great blog post, because we each, as people with visual impairments, as people who are invested in the lives of those with visual impairments, if we happen to be sighted and we're not visually impaired, as a member of a consumer organization, or as somebody who uses a product from a company that's not accessible, we all have a responsibility. So in that blog post, which is on the Flatten and Accessibility website, there's a link. We talk about things you can do. So one of the first things you can do is write a letter to your newspaper. Tell them about something specific in your community that is challenging for you as a person with a visual impairment due to COVID-19, and then point them to that section of the report. You can get with an organization in your community. Go offer to give a talk to the Lions Club, the Rotary Club, the Better Business Bureau. They might be doing it via Zoom, but that's okay. You can do it. And share with them about the report. And again, what's important in that report to you? Are you concerned that you can't get to a drive-through COVID-19 test site because guess what? You don't drive. Another suggestion we have is to reach out to your government officials, whether that's at the county level, the city level, the state level, the federal level. And again, don't just say, hey, here's a report, but what's meaningful in this report to me that I want you to be aware of so that I can influence the legislative decisions that you make. Another thing is many of our participants talked about technology challenges, whether it was platforms like Zoom or Teams, whether it was apps like Instacart or Walmart, whether it was telehealth apps. So if you have a specific issue with one of those tools, again, contact that company, contact them, and not just, hey, your tool really stinks, I can't use it, but hey, these are the challenges for me as a screen reader user specifically with your tool. I'm not the only one experiencing this. Let me point you to the technology section of this report. And in each of the sections of the report, Melody, we give recommendations to assist people in making change. So we don't want to just say, hey, this stinks for people with visual impairments that we can't get to COVID-19 test sites. We make recommendations about government officials need to have a plan in place for those who don't drive. And it might not be because of a visual impairment. And there might be another emergency disaster. So how are people going to get services? So those recommendations in the report are really important.
You know, I'm so glad you brought that. And just to dovetail what you say, you know, in making those choices is saying to yourself, I love how you pointed out, pick out what is your, because everybody needs their why story. If we go in with a generic, oh, well, this is bothersome, but what is it that really burns at your heart and you want to see change? Because that's how we're going to do it. And there is a silver lining here. I mean, people are listening. And if you can offer a solution in what Penny just said, that, you know, it may be that you can't drive, but it could be other people, not just the fact that you can't drive, but it would seem out the broad from their scope of thinking, geez, how could we get more testing accessible? How could we get this transportation more accessible? Just whatever, you know, our website, wow, we're serving, you know, an underdeveloped country. You know, what do we do here? And I believe we all have that voice. And sometimes when we're stuck, vision impaired or not, we think we're stuck, but we're not. So I thank you for sharing it that way, that perspective. And Penny, I just, before we move into the education piece, I love how you and your team are so passionate getting this data and then turning it around and using it as a tool. And I think that speaks volumes to that and the collaboration that's been done to get this done. So I just wanted to applaud that before we move into the education piece.
Sure. Well, thank you. And absolutely, this is a huge village. Like I said, there's 7 folks on who authored the report, but there are many, many volunteers and AFB staff and the other organizations that tweeted and blogged and emailed about the study and now the report. So it really does take a village.
Yes. And the volunteers that took the time to really detail the survey that gave us, you know, an added lift for our own voices. I mean, we now have, you know, you've spelled it out. All these different people of different walks of life have given you the, you know, time and took. And if you are listening right now and you were, we thank you so much for being, and all of you are part of the AFB family. So it's we're just really blessed and honored to be here with you today talking about this. So when we looked at the education piece, Penny, what did you guys find?
Okay, so we looked at education. In Flattened and Accessibility, we had two education sections. And not a lot of people answered either one of these. And partly that's because 25% of our people were retired. A lot of our people were working about 30%. So we had a small group who themselves were taking part in education, whether that was community college, vocational, or whether that was vision specific, for example, O&M training or dog guide training. Obviously, for most of those people, it just stopped the training that they were in, or their dog guide class was canceled. The people who were attending, education online in some virtual format, some of those folks really struggled. Think for a moment, for example, let's say I'm taking a chemistry class. So I'm in the chemistry lab, I have a partner typically, and so we get to a part of an experiment that's visual, so maybe that's the part my partner does, and for that part I'm the note taker. But now all of a sudden my chemistry professor has posted a video online of my professor doing the experiment or somebody else doing the experiment, and I'm supposed to watch the video and draw my conclusions. So things changed really quickly, and so some people had to drop out of classes, Melody, which was a real shame. And some people were concerned they wouldn't graduate. And so that was a big issue for a small group of people in education. We also looked at K-12 education through the lens of the adults taking the survey. And many family members who took that part of the survey, again, just a couple hundred, reported that the tools that their child was using for education were not accessible to them. So one parent talked about, I have a young child, I want to say it was a first grade child, and I truly can't remember. But I have a first grade child who's sighted, and I'm a blind parent, and everything is a picture. They get sent home a packet, and I go to, scan that, and all I'm getting is image. So how can I help my child with this? So that was an issue for our parents. But really, the bulk of our data on education comes from the Access and Engagement survey. So, of course, there's a website for that, www.afp/accessengagement. And right now, today, on October 14th, when we're recording, Melody, we have the executive summary up there. So it gives you a good sneak peek of what's coming in the report, and also has some recommendations that are our key recommendations. That full report, all our pieces fall together with my community engagement team colleagues, so I drive nuts. If that report comes together, it will be up by the end of the month. And again, that will be a fully accessible PDF, and it will be web pages that will be divided by our topic areas, which are early intervention, preschool, school-age children, which include children up through transition, because many of our special ed children stay in school till they're approximately 21 years of age. And then we have a professional section, and then we have specifically skills that teachers of visually impaired students are teaching and O&M instructors are teaching. And what we learned about education is it was a real smorgasbord back there in April and May. And some of our students were not getting education. Some of our students were not getting accessible education. And Melody, the one statistic that really jumps out at me over and over again from that report. So we asked the teachers of students with visual impairment, of which there were about 890, I believe. Don't swear me to that number. It could be 880. But we asked those teachers, do you have at least one student engaged in online education? And of that group who said yes, 85% that said they had at least one student who was having accessibility issues with class content. Now, how can a child participate in a class, a geometry class, a fourth grade English language arts block class, a 10th grade art class, a kindergarten class? I have a friend whose little sighted grandson is struggling with kindergarten. He's sighted. How can a child participate in that type of learning if the material isn't accessible? And that's a real concern.
Yes, I agree. It's you're not giving the equal access to education to all students. And I know there was one quote that you read me earlier that I really, from the child perspective, that was one that got to me too.
Well, that was a parent, I believe, who talked about the, we have two parent quotes I pulled. I did pull a lot of quotes, but my students are missing their time at school, saying that they are allowed to be more independent at school. They are bored at home and needing more guidance from me and other teachers as to the kinds of things to do. I am trying to stay in contact with my team so we are getting some social interaction with, while still planning for our students. These teachers of visually impaired students and orientation and mobility specialists had a huge, and still continue to have a huge plate, especially when we're talking about meeting the needs of children who have additional disabilities and or are deafblind. And, you know, these are children who really need hands-on instruction, or are Braille learners who need to have Braille under their fingertips. And how do you produce Braille for a child when you had one day notice, literally, to get out of the building, and you didn't get to take your Braille embosser with you, all your tools? And even if you did get to take that Braille embosser, how do you get Braille to all these children across the district? Really challenging, especially when our families don't all have the technology that we assume they do. We have this really huge digital divide that really is becoming evident as we go into this next school year.
Yes, and I agree, and I'm going to ask a question that you wanted me to make sure that I asked you during this sample.
We're giving all our secrets away here, Melody. Yeah. You're not supposed to know that.
Well, we are. Well, I want to make sure that you all know that we really took the time to be able to put this together and frame it nicely. But do you feel with the sampling of this survey when it comes to children and accessibility that the sampling represents, you know, children with visual impairments in the United States well?
No, it doesn't, which is why I asked Melody to put that question in specifically. So our sample was actually United States and Canada. So we had 113 participants of the 1,432 were from Canada. So I want to make sure we get our northern friends in there as well. But whether we're talking Canada or we're talking the United States, including Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia, so it's all 50 states, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and six Canadian provinces. By and large, the individuals who completed the survey were white, female, and had technology. And this is a real concern for us as researchers. So our team, and this team is comprised of 10 individuals representing 8 organizations and universities. 9 out of 10 of us are in for round 2, and round 2 is actually going to release at the end of the month. So we are going to do access and engagement 2. We know that some of the issues that we're facing children, families, and professionals in April and May of 2020 are facing them in October and November of 2020. We know that some things have improved, but we know that many things have not. We know that there are successes out there, but we know that there are a lot of challenges out there. And so our goal with the Access and Engagement 2 is to capture what's going on due to COVID-19. And this is where, Melody, I'm really hoping your listeners and others throughout the 2 countries will help us. If every person reaches out to one individual who may not have easy access to the internet, may not have access at all, may not have a device, or may have access, but is so overwhelmed with childcare and working and other things, that if we each reached out to one person and offered to be a support, so that might be, hey, you know, call me up when it's convenient and I'll fill out the survey, I'll read it to you and I'll fill out the survey for you online. It might be, hey, I know you've got so much on your plate. How about if I bring dinner over for your family on Thursday night and I'll play with the kids in the backyard and feed them while you stay inside and complete this survey because it's so important. But we each need to reach out and offer to support those families who may not normally get a blog post, a tweet, an email, and say, I'm going to make the half an hour to 40 minutes to sit down and do this survey. But we need to make them understand that their voice is so, so important to all of us.
It is. And I'm so glad that we brought that up, because I love the fact that, you know, we can talk about this, but then also point out where we still see the pockets that are not being reached. And again, saying this is how we can help and lend that hand to do that. And thank you so much. And I want to take this opportunity to say thank you for sharing all this with us. We're going to move into the question answer portion so that we can hear from our audience. So I'm sure there's some more questions. I would really love to hear comments, but thank you so much, Penny, for you and all your team and to everyone who's participated. And I know that I have my to-do items, so thank you so much. I'm not just an AFB employee, but I'm also a visually impaired person, and it's our duty to do this.
Absolutely. Thanks, Melody. I'm anxious for the first question. So, Susan, do we have one?
We do, and it's from Liz. Liz says, for flattened inaccessibility, do you also hear from people with multiple disabilities or additional health conditions?
Yes, so we do. 43% of the people who completed the survey reported that they had those additional disabilities. And I gave a couple of examples, but let me give another one that really kind of stuck with me. And this was from in the healthcare area. So we talked about, you know, how do you get to COVID testing? But then what if you are hospitalized or you need healthcare, you have a visual impairment? Often you bring somebody with you to the hospital, you know, who can be an advocate for you, who can, you know, be a visual interpreter for you. So this is what one person said. It would be terrifying for me to be hospitalized alone, especially because I know people don't value my life because they think my quality of life is less than theirs. Without someone to assist me and advocate for me, I feel like I was fighting the virus and a system that doesn't want me. We heard, especially from our folks with additional disabilities, that they were pre-COVID already feeling like their life wasn't valued, that they didn't have equal footing, so to speak, as those who were fully abled, and that, which is not one of my favorite expressions, but people who are not with a disability. And COVID-19, especially in that beginning when we had all these news stories about, well, what if hospitals run out of ventilators and have to make a decision? So we did hear that. So thanks for that question, Liz. Do we get any more, Susan?
We do. We have one from John. He says, regarding access and engagement, how have things changed from the spring to the fall for students who are blind or low vision?
You know, I can tell you a lot of incidentals, John, because I follow several Facebook groups of professionals who work with visually impaired children, but we don't really know for sure. We sure don't know across the country and in Canada. And that's why it's so important that we're going to embark on this Access and Engagement 2 survey at the end of October. And that survey is going to be open for probably three and a half weeks. And we really, really, again, are asking all of you to help get the word out to families and support any families who may need a little bit of encouragement or access to a device to be able to do that survey. So we'll have a much better idea for you after the first of the year. But incidentally, I can tell you, things are not going well for a lot of our kids.
We have a comment from John. Melody, do we have time? Or
yes.
Excuse me, from Lee. Do we have time? Okay. This yes. is a bit lengthy, so I'm going to read this to you, Penny. COVID should be a wake-up call to people who are blind or visually impaired. Too many allow themselves to become dependent on others to do things for them, placing themselves in a very vulnerable position. It would be great for this fantastic survey to be a catalyst to encourage blindness organizations and professionals to work to create a mindset shift toward independence for people who are blind. Hopefully this could be a start to getting technology and resources in place for themselves to be able to better face all the future could bring.
Thank you to the individual with that quote. And I didn't pull one of my favorite quotes from the Flatten study. So I'll paraphrase it, but it's actually right at the beginning. I believe it's right at the beginning of the report. They're all blending together. But we had one of our participants who basically said the same thing, that let's use COVID-19 to create, you know, a new normal, and let's make lemonade from lemons. This has been a very challenging time with over 210,000 deaths in our country. We're all feeling vulnerable, whether we have a disability or not. And it's really easy for us to just think it's somebody else's problem. But if we all come together, and here we had 16 organizations involved with flattening and companies, and 20, again, some of them were the same, with access and engagement. That's a lot of folks who really can pull together to really affect change at the policy level, at the company level, at the education level. So absolutely, please use this report and the access and engagement report that'll be out in a few weeks. And don't just read and shelve them. What can you do with it at your own personal level? Thank you.
Very well said, Penny. Melody, we don't have any other questions. If anyone else has a question, you can send those to us, and I'm sure Penny would be happy to answer them.
Of course. Yes, and you can definitely send them through me at mgoodspeed@afb.org, or you can send them to Penny. Penny, did you want to share information or where they
can? Sure. So my email address is prosenblum@afb.org, and so that's prosenblum@afb.org.
Yes, and everybody, Penny has done a great job. If you want to learn more about what we are doing with the Flatten Inaccessibility, where we're going, attend the town halls, be a voice, check out the blog post, do everything that we can, because together we can create a life of no limits for ourselves and for everyone, and we're better together as we unite. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We've covered a lot of ground here with one aspect of this, but it's such an important aspect. And Penny, thank you so much for you and your team have done. And really been awesome. So thank you guys. Have a great rest of your week. And again, we're looking forward to seeing you next week. Take care, everyone.